This is Jan Kane, returning with the pantograph, dated January 31st. We'll continue now with death notices. Nell Bernice Eckley. Nell Bernice Eckley, age 99, passed away on January 29th at her home at Luther Oaks. A memorial service will be held at Luther Oaks on Sunday, February 2nd at 4 p.m. Memorials may be sent to the Robert S. Eckley Scholarship Fund at Illinois Wesleyan University or Wesley United Methodist Church. Robert Merrill. Robert Lee Merrill, age 80, of Bloomington, passed away peacefully on Monday, January 27th at his home. A visitation for Bob will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. on Monday, February 3rd, at Beck Memorial Home, with a memorial service at 11 a.m. with Pastor Jason Collins officiating. The family suggests memorials to be made to the Pet Central Helps Animal Rescue. Beck Memorial Home, Bloomington, is in charge of arrangements. Online condolences may be sent to www.beckmemorial.com. Next, we have an article pertaining to state government. The title is Republican Lawmaker Says She's Received Some Phone Calls from IDOC Officers About Undocumented Inmates. A Republican state lawmaker from Southern Illinois claims she has received, quote, some phone calls from anonymous Illinois Department of Corrections employees about inmates who are immigrants without legal status. Last week, State Senator Terry Bryant, Republican from Murfreesboro, posted to her social media accounts a memorandum from the IDOC to its employees, reminding them to follow the Trust Act, a law signed by then-Governor Bruce Rauner in 2017 that generally prohibits state and local law enforcement, including state corrections officers, from participating in federal immigration enforcement. Terry Bryant wrote, IDOC staff are prohibited from notifying or cooperating with ICE, so no way for ICE to know the offender is incarcerated. If you are IDOC staff who wants ICE to know of an illegal immigrant in IDOC, call or message me. Terry Bryant then goes on to say, I won't rat you out. I will notify ICE. I will also refile the repeal of the Trust Act. Click below for directions issued by IDOC. Bryant, an IDOC employee for two decades before her election to the state legislature in 2014, urged employees to confide in her information pertaining to undocumented inmates. I won't rat you out. I will notify Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Bryant said last week. Since then, Bryant claims she has received phone calls from employees about undocumented inmates. She instructed her staff to not ask for names of those calling her office in order to ensure that they are not reprimanded. I asked for the offender's name, the offender's institutional number, and what facility the offender is in, which they're located, Bryant said at a press conference at the state capitol on Tuesday. So I don't know if it's their family who are calling. I don't know if it's staff at the facilities that are calling, specifically because I don't want to know who these folks are. And then I can protect them from those who would go after them for reporting someone who has violated federal law. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Tuesday pushed back on Bryant's claims, insisting that Illinois' prisons do not track citizenship status for inmates and are compliant with federal law. People who are being held in our jails and prisons, we do not have a record of if they are undocumented or not. We don't keep those records, Pritzker said. If a federal official shows up with a criminal warrant to pick them up, we hand them over, Pritzker said. That's how it works. A spokesperson for IDOC did not return a request for comment on Bryant's remarks. Representative Greg Johnson, Democrat from East Moline, who spent more than 30 years as a corrections officer and supervisor with IDOC, said he believes Bryant's recent actions are performative. It's grandstanding. I like Senator Bryant, but it's grandstanding, Johnson said. Many, many times over the years, we had individuals who immigration would come pick up at the end of their term. It's not a common occurrence, but they know where they're at. They do come get them. Over my years, I saw many transferred out. Bryant, alongside Senators Andrew Chesney, Republican from Freeport, and Neil Anderson, Republican from Andalusia, slammed Illinois' immigration laws at a press conference on Tuesday. Pritzker says he wants law enforcement to deport violent criminals and the undocumented, but that is, in fact, a lie, Anderson said. He knows that the law that he continues to support makes it virtually impossible for law enforcement to coordinate with immigration officials. The three Republican senators have introduced legislation that would amend the Trust Act to allow state and local law enforcement agencies to cooperate with ICE if an undocumented person is charged with or convicted of a felony. The proposal would also require a state or local law enforcement agency to notify ICE when they have an undocumented person in custody. Bryant and Chesney have also proposed a bill that would repeal the Trust Act entirely. Let's turn to some Red Bird sports. Takeaways from Illinois State's thrilling MVC battle with Belmont. Johnny Kinzinger almost lost the basketball. Instead, he won the game. After losing possession briefly in the final 30 seconds, Kinzinger and his Illinois State teammates regrouped and found the sophomore guard a three-point shot he sank with 14 seconds left to boost the Redbirds to a dramatic 81-78 Missouri Valley Conference victory over Belmont on Wednesday before a CEFCU arena crowd of 3,477. I just saw Dalton Banks with the ball, and my guy turned his head when Dalton went to drive, Kinzinger said. I spaced to the corner. I thought he was going to fly out, so I shot faked. Then I had to get to a step-back jumper with the shot clock going down, and I let it go. It felt good off the hand. Belmont had 2 3-point attempts to tie in the final seconds that were both off the mark as ISU improved to 13-9 overall and 5-6 in the MVC. The Bruins, 15-7 and 7-4 in the MVC, trapped Kinzinger, who went to the floor to retrieve the ball when it rolled away. It was weird. They came and trapped right away. It kind of threw the play out the door, Kinzinger said. Then Dalton did a great job getting downhill and was able to find me open. We improvised, we played, and it ended up Johnny made an unbelievable shot, said ISU coach Ryan Pettin. That's why the guys call him Big Shot Johnny in the locker room. He followed through on that tonight. That's what great players do. Kinzinger was 5 of 11 from three-point range on his way to 22 points. Landon Wolf's drive and dunk with 1:15 remaining handed ISU a 77-71 margin. But Wolf's exuberance over the impressive play cost him. Wolf stood over a Belmont defender down on the floor long enough to get whistled for a taunting technical. The Bruins' Tyler Lundblade connected on the two technical free throws, and with Belmont retaining possession, the visitors added two Jonathan Peer foul shots to close in within two. I know what my eyes saw. I didn't need to ask for clarification, Pettin said. My first reaction was that probably by the letter of the law, that warrants a technical. He said something as he was standing over him. That's very uncharacteristic of Landon. I think he got caught up in the moment. That's something we can grow from. The ISU coach said Wolf came up to me after we sang the fight song, apologizing, almost with tears in his eyes. I said, "We won the game. Go celebrate with your teammates." He's an emotional guy. I love that about him. The dunk was Wolf's second of the game. He finished with 11 points. Chase Walker received a medical attention once during the game and again after the final horn, and limped back to join his joyous teammates. When asked how he felt, Walker quickly replied, "Super-duper fantastic, just cramping. I've got to drink some more water." Walker was 9 of 12 from the field and joined Kinziger with 22 points. ISU connected on just 2 of 15 three-point attempts in the first half, but rebounded to sink 8 of 16 after halftime. "I was telling them at half we were done missing," Pettan said. "We did talk about let's settle down and relax and be us. At times, maybe we were pressing a little bit in the first half with those. In the second half, what you saw was some of the quality of shots were improving because of the ball movement." Pierre topped the Bruins with 27 points, and Sam Orme added 20 off the bench. The duo combined to toss in 9 of 17 from beyond the arc. Belmont finished at 12 of 27 from three-point range. Free throws and turnovers. ISU suffered through its worst free throw shooting effort of the season, 5 of 14, but committed a season low 4 turnovers. "If you've watched us play, you would say we're pretty poised at the free throw line. When we get the chance to put a nail in the coffin, we do it," Pettan said of the unusual inaccuracy. "The way we took care of the ball spoke to me more than anything." Red shirts for Lieb and Skunberg. Fifth-year seniors Brandon Lieb and Bowden Skunberg have been sidelined the entire season with injuries. Pettan confirmed both will sit out the entire campaign and use a medical redshirt to return to the Redbirds next season. "Both have indicated they want to be back here next year," Pettan said. "As disappointed as we are this year, they are not going to be a part of this. We have equal promise as we turn to next year. Two older guys we were going to count on a lot this year, hopefully we'll be able to count on a lot next year." Now we have a column from Senator Dick Durbin entitled, "Big Pharma Should Disclose Prices on Drug Advertisements." Patients in the United States pay the highest prescription drug prices in the world, on average 4 times what people in other developed countries pay for the exact same brand name medications. What makes the U.S. such an outlier when it comes to the high price of prescription drugs? The uniquely American phenomenon of pharmaceutical advertising. If you turn on the nightly news, scroll Instagram, or stream your favorite show, you are likely to be bombarded by commercials for the latest wonder drug featuring a pleasing tune and patients rock climbing, golfing, or whitewater rafting. The U.S. is one of 2 countries in the world that allows these misleading prescription drug advertisements. Each year, the pharmaceutical industry spends $6 billion in direct-to-consumer advertising to flood the airwaves with commercials that steer patients to the most expensive medications, despite cheaper, more effective drugs being on the market. This practice of pushing patients toward more costly drugs drives up the cost of healthcare while undermining the role of doctors. Meanwhile, our Canadian neighbors, spared from a constant stream of advertisements, can access the same prescription drugs for a fraction of the cost that the pharmaceutical industry charges American consumers. For too long, Big Pharma has filled the airwaves with tons of commercials to fuel demand for its products, while failing to disclose the inflated, ever-increasing price of these medications. Patients deserve to know the price of their medication. A healthy dose of transparency is the prescription Big Pharma needs. To demand more sunshine from Big Pharma's advertisements, I have partnered with my Republican colleague, U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, to introduce the Drug Price Transparency for Consumers Act. Our legislation would require price disclosures on advertisements for prescription drugs, which would empower patients and reduce excess spending on medications. When Big Pharma pauses the jingle in an advertisement long enough to rattle off side effects faster than you can comprehend, the least it can do is tell you how much the drug costs. In response to our legislation, Big Pharma would tell you it needs to keep prices secret because patients might be confused by learning the price the manufacturer charges. We have a little more faith in American consumers, especially since our legislation would permit the advertisement to explain how insurance coverage may lower out-of-pocket expenses. But what it will fail to mention is this: its incessant advertising is designed to pad its profits. When then-President Joe Biden recently announced the 15 prescription drugs that would be negotiated for lower prices under Medicare, many of these blockbuster medications were among the most heavily advertised products, costing taxpayers billions of dollars. A recent study found 2/3 of advertised drugs provided, quote, low therapeutic value. As President Donald Trump has previously tweeted about this effort, it's time for drug corporations to come clean about their prices in TV ads, adding, if drug companies are ashamed of those prices, lower them. That's right. Trump has supported our effort, finding common ground with me and Grassley to help American patients afford their medications at the pharmacy counter. And given the First Amendment challenges that would likely be brought against any effort to outright ban DDC advertising, our bipartisan approach is the most credible strategy on the table to lower drug costs and protect patients from these misleading ads. This issue is beyond partisanship. In fact, a Kaiser Family Foundation survey found 88% of Americans support this price disclosure policy for advertisements. American physicians, hospitals, and AARP support it as well. Grassley and I will continue to push for accountability from Big Pharma, ensuring all Americans have access to affordable prescription drugs. It's shameful that Big Pharma spends billions in targeted advertisements, often bombarding patients with gibberish while keeping them in the dark about one crucial factor, the price. With the DDC Act, we will require Big Pharma to end the secrecy and shine light on the real costs of medications, saving Americans from excessive healthcare costs. Next, we have a column from Ask Angie entitled 10 Tips for Protecting Your Home from Water Damage. Water can be one of the most devastating forms of damage to your home. The average water damage restoration job costs $3,800, and that can go up to $16,000 and beyond when you factor in ruined carpets, disintegrating drywall, and mold in places you can't even see. The Insurance Information Institute says the average insurance claim for water damage is nearly $14,000. Here are my tips on how to keep water from making a soggy mess of your day. Your most obvious prevention task is to stay up to date on maintenance. Small leaks from fixtures don't go away on their own, and eventually they become big ones. Get a plumbing inspection regularly, and if something starts to go wrong, fix it sooner rather than later. Next, regularly inspect your home for signs of internal leaks. Dark, damp spots on the floors, walls, or ceiling are an instant sign of trouble. A musty smell, chipped paint, and peeling wallpaper all could indicate damage. Keep your gutters clean. Overflowing gutters are a major cause of yard erosion, foundation damage, and basement leaks, which can all lead to water intrusions in your home. Install leak detection sensors in areas that might easily start leaking where you can't see, such as under cabinets. Modern sensors can send an alert to your mobile device as soon as they detect unexpected water, and every second counts when it comes to shutting down a leak. Resist the temptation to run appliances when you're asleep. It seems easy to turn on the washing machine and call it a night, but if it fails and starts pouring out water, you might not know for hours. Shut down your water main when you're on vacation. Ask your plumber for advice before you do so. it might be a better idea to shut off only individual fixtures. Pay close attention to the fine print on your homeowner's insurance policy. They usually don't cover flooding, for one thing, and if you've left maintenance undone or didn't fix a malfunctioning appliance that suddenly starts to burst out water, they may deny your claim. You might also be able to purchase supplemental insurance for certain kinds of water damage. Ensure your basement's waterproofing systems are up to date. If you have a French drain, check to see if it's clear. If you have a sump pump, test it regularly to verify it will drain properly. A malfunctioning sump pump can lead to a lot of damage and in a hurry, and it's often not covered by insurance. Check your water bill every month. A sudden jump in cost could indicate a leak you don't know about. And finally, know the number of a good plumber. You never know when you will have a leak or plumbing emergency that needs immediate attention. If you don't already have one, establish a relationship with a plumber as soon as possible. Next, we have an article about the airplane and helicopter crash that occurred in Arlington, Virginia on Wednesday evening. The headline is "Washington Crash Site Goes From Rescue to Recovery. All Aboard Feared Dead in Jet Army Helicopter Collision Over Potomac." All 64 people aboard an American Airlines jet that collided with an Army helicopter were feared dead in what was likely to be the worst U.S. aviation disaster in almost a quarter century, officials said Thursday. At least 28 bodies were pulled from the icy waters of the Potomac River after the helicopter apparently flew into the path of the jet late Wednesday as it was landing at Ronald Reagan National Airport near Washington, officials said. The plane carried 60 passengers and 4 crew. 3 soldiers were aboard the helicopter. "We don't believe there are any survivors," said John Donnelly, the fire chief in the nation's capital. "We are now at the point where we are switching from a rescue operation to a recovery operation." The plane was found upside down in 3 sections in waist-deep water, and first responders were searching an area of the Potomac River as far south as the Woodrow Wilson Bridge, roughly 3 miles south of the airport, Donnelly said. The helicopter wreckage was also found. If no one survived, the collision would be the deadliest U.S. air crash since 2001. There was no immediate word on the cause of the collision, but officials said flight conditions were clear as the jet arrived from Wichita, Kansas, with U.S. and Russian figure skaters and others aboard. On final approach into Reagan National, it collided with a military aircraft on an otherwise normal approach, American Airlines CEO Robert Isom said. "At this time, we don't know why the military aircraft came into the path of the aircraft." President Donald Trump opened a White House news conference after the crash with a moment of silence honoring the victims, calling it an hour of anguish for the country. But he spent much of his time casting political blame, lashing out at the Biden administration and diversity efforts at the Federal Aviation Administration, saying they had led to slipping standards, even as he acknowledged that the cause of the crash was unknown. Trump spread blame among air traffic controllers, the helicopter pilots, and Democratic policies at federal agencies. Images from the river showed boats around the partly submerged wing and the mangled wreckage of the plane's fuselage. Inside Reagan National Airport, the mood was somber Thursday morning as stranded passengers waited for flights to resume, sidestepping camera crews and staring out the terminal's windows at the Potomac, where recovery efforts were barely visible in the distance. Astor Andemichel had been at the airport since Wednesday evening with her elderly father, who was flying to Indiana to visit family. She spent much of the long night thinking about the victims and their families. "I've been crying since yesterday," she said, her voice cracking. She recalled seeing a young woman frantically running through the airport around the time of the crash, possibly in search of a loved one who would never return. "I pray for them," she said. "This is devastating." Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said, who was sworn in earlier this week, was asked if he could reassure Americans that the United States still has the safest airspace in the world. "Can I guarantee the American flying public that the United States has the most safe and secure airspace in the world?" And the answer to that is absolutely yes, we do, he said. The night was clear, the plane and helicopter were both in standard flight patterns, and there was standard communication between the aircraft and the tower, Duffy said. "We have early indicators of what happened here," Duffy said, though he declined to elaborate pending an investigation. It is not unusual to have a military aircraft flying the river and an aircraft landing at the airport, he said. Asked if the plane was aware that there was a helicopter in the area, Duffy said the helicopter was aware that there was a plane in the area. Asked about Trump suggesting in an overnight social media post that the collision could have been prevented, Duffy said, "From what I've seen so far, do I think this was preventable? Absolutely. If everyone aboard the plane was killed, it would be the deadliest U.S. airline crash since November 12, 2001, when an American Airlines flight crashed into a residential area of Bell Harbor, New York, just after takeoff from Kennedy Airport, killing all 260 people aboard. The last major fatal crash involving a U.S. commercial airline occurred in 2009 near Buffalo, New York. Everyone aboard the Bombardier DHC-8 propeller plane was killed, including 45 passengers, two pilots, and two flight attendants. Another person on the ground also died, bringing the death toll to 50. An investigation determined that the captain accidentally caused the plane to stall as it approached the airport in Buffalo. Passengers on Wednesday's flight included a group of figure skaters, their coaches, and family members who were returning from a development camp that followed the U.S. Figure Skating Championships in Wichita. "We are devastated by this unspeakable tragedy and hold the victims' families close in our hearts," U.S. Figure Skating said in a statement. Two of those coaches were identified by the Kremlin as Russian figure skaters Yevgenia Shishkova and Vadim Namov, who won the Paris title at the 1994 World Championships and competed twice in the Olympics. The Skating Club of Boston lists them as coaches, and their son, Maxim Namov, is a competitive figure skater for the U.S. Club CEO Doug Zeghib described the group as highly talented, saying their loss would resonate through the skating community for years. "Folks are just stunned by this," Zeghib said. "They are like family to us." The FAA said the mid-air crash occurred before 8 p.m. Central Standard Time in some of the most tightly controlled and monitored airspace in the world, just over 3 miles south of the White House and the Capitol. This has been Jan Kane reading the Pantograph with you, dated January 31st. It has been a pleasure, and I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a great day.